Antonio Rosmini, a priest whose copious writings are once regarded with suspicion, but are now venerated for their wisdom and insight. Antonio Rosmini, founder of the Institute of Charity, is to be beatified on the 18th of November in the north of Italy. My own congregation, the Franciscan Missionaries of the Divine Motherhood, has had a very close relationship with the Institute of Charity, or Rosminians as they are more commonly known, for more than 5 decades. It was, then, a real joy to speak to Father Tony Furlong, the rector of the Rosminian College in Rome. I've known the Rosminians for about 40 years, and I know that you are the Institute of Charity, and it has been said that you couldn't have a better name because you're the ideal ones for putting it into practice. Mm. And I've seen that charity. Mm. You're distributed in many places across the world, but your founder is about to be beatified, and yet his writings were banned at one time. Would I say something about him?
Yes, indeed. Janet, we're only just about 300 in number worldwide, but we're very thinly spread because our call is to our own sanctification. But, of course, the Gospel says, love God and love your neighbour. And so whenever we get a request for our help, we always say yes. So you're quite right, we are very thinly spread throughout the world. It's a wonderful coincidence that we're together here in the studio because we would have done our novitiates within 5 miles of each other. The mother house of the Anglo-Welsh province is at Wanish, near Guildford. And, of course, yours at that time was at Ladywell, just the other side of Bramley. The core of our spirituality is this. It's the spirituality that Rosmini tried to live, that you love God and you love your neighbour. But he had what he called the principle of passivity. He wouldn't presume to know what God's will was. He wouldn't actually invent a project to help people. He would retire into prayer and contemplation until the call of charity became patently obvious. If there was right in front of him a need, particularly a need presented by the bishops, he would use the men of his institute to respond as wholeheartedly as he possibly could to that request. So we don't specifically do anything. We don't run schools or parishes. We simply try and come to the help of the church as expressed by the request of the bishop, wherever that may happen to be. So you know, we're on 4 or 5 continents, even though we're only just over 300 in number.
Yes, because I've seen a number of Rosminians who are Indian. Mm. I know you're in Tanzania. You're certainly in England and Wales.
Yes, it's an international institute because of the nature of the church. The requests come in from all directions, and we say yes when we can. Rosmini was a wonderful figure. He's being beatified because he's holy. It comes down to something as simple as that, an extraordinary lifestyle, a towering intellect. I don't pretend to be an expert on his philosophy, but that's the basis of his holiness, this search for objective truth, which of course makes him a man of today, because faith and reason are in complete harmony in all of Rosmini's writings, even the way he lived the gospel. To love God and to love your neighbour is to be, first of all, a man of prayer, to embrace contemplation, but only to transfer that sort of spirituality into action when it becomes obvious what the Lord wants us to do.
Well, I know that the late Father Dennis Cleary spent years translating his writings from Italian into English, but the fact that it took years sounds as if there were many of them.
He wrote a library, which is, I suppose, one of the reasons why we've waited 150 years for this beatification. He was also a politician. He wanted to see a federation of Italian states under the presidency of the Pope, would you believe? So a federation of states, isn't that interesting? Because there's still, you know, in the 21st century, this tension among the regions of Italy, which is, of course, one nation under a president and one government. But because of his politics and also because, let's face it, he based his rule on that of Ignatius, and that upset some of the Jesuits of his time, and he was a man very much under attack. So from this vast library of works, there were people who took out of context certain propositions, even after his death. 1888 was the principal condemnation of Rosmini's works, And they cast a very poor light on individual statements. And eventually the Holy See, in fact, condemned 40 of these propositions, together with his book called The Five Wounds of the Church, which was critical of certain ways of being church, many of which were addressed by the Second Vatican Council. And it wasn't until 2001 that Cardinal Ratzinger signed a nota saying that these controversies are completely part of the past, and in fact the text does not represent the true thought of Rosmini. So the beatification process has taken a long time, because he was in a sense under a shadow from 1888 to 2001. And the size of the Institute today, I think, reflects the fact that certain bishops didn't particularly want to involve the Institute for all that time, because, of course, our founder was under a cloud. And this is in complete contrast to the testimonies of those who knew him. Even within a year or two of his death, testimonies to the sanctity of this man were being compiled. So it's a wonderful vindication that at the beginning of the 21st century, Rosmini was declared completely orthodox and totally faithful to the teaching of the Church.
Well, were his writings political if he was interested in federation, or were they more theological or scriptural or what?
Well, even his concept of how political life should evolve was based on his philosophy. There's a wonderful unity in Rosmini's system. And although at a certain time he was advising Pius IX, at the request of Pius IX, about where politically Italy should be heading, Pius IX had political enemies, and eventually certain forces within the Kingdom of Naples succeeded in distancing Rosmini from Pius IX. So he was under attack for his politics, because he had a particular point of view, but also the fact that his rule was basically Ignatian, that got him, if you like, enemies from within the church, or people who didn't like what he was proposing, and therefore did what they could to cast him in a poor light.
Well, his beatification is in Novara. Hmm. Now, is that where he was born or where he died?
No, he's a man of Rovereto, which at the time of his birth and most of his life was under the domination of Austria. But I believe it's because the miracle associated with his beatification took place and was investigated in the Diocese of Novara. It's all northern Italy, of course, but the beatification is up there. And the bishop at the moment is very, very supportive and has really got his whole diocese on board and looking forward to the beatification day itself.
Now, there was a miracle performed before he was able to be declared worthy of beatification.
There's always been people within the Institute. It's sad to think that many of them have now passed away, but they were longing to see this day. And in 1926, the miracle took place and was verified. It was beyond medical explanation. A sister of charity, the Sisters of Rosmini's Foundation, she was cured quite spectacularly in 1926. And even though Rosmini was under a cloud, there were enough people who believed in Rosmini to keep all this paperwork faithfully, and who, I suppose, must have known in their heart that one day it would be of great use, because the Church would vindicate Rosmini and the beatification would go forward.
Yes, because it must have been quite difficult if his writings were condemned, if people felt drawn to follow him.
Yes, I wonder if that's why we attracted a number of rebels over the years. I don't know. But, yes, certainly the Institute now is tiny. It's interesting that, you know, having chosen from all the possible rules, having seen the wisdom of St. Ignatius, the Institute is still numbered in hundreds, whereas, of course, the Jesuits, with a much longer history, are still numbered in many thousands. And I'm sure the cloud under which Rosmini was cast has some sort of influence on the size of the Institute today. But I must say in defence that we're a wonderful family.
Definitely.
When you're only 300 in number, of course, you know virtually everybody in the Institute, and it has a great family feel about it.
Yes, because I've experienced myself from my own years of knowing the Rosminians that you do show a tremendous love for each other, and you do give the indication, the impression that you know each other well and hold each other in high regard.
Yeah, I mean, it comes down to the person. You see, we don't compete as, you know, the best teachers, the best parish priests. Rosmini's fundamental reason for bringing us together was to cooperate in the work of our own sanctification, and we do that as a society, as a community, and therefore the regard we have for each other is very important. And even the regard we have for each other makes more fruitful the works that we may have to do. But supporting each other comes first.
And your role, being the rector of the Rosminian College, is particularly one of supporting and enabling.
It is. We have vocations at the moment coming from what were, you know, really our mission areas of India, Tanzania, Kenya, and Venezuela. The shape of the Institute is changing, like many religious orders in the Church, that numbers are not coming forward in Europe at the moment, although there is an international community of novices at Calvario di Domodossola, which is where Rosmini established the order, in northern Italy. But I must say, of our students here in Rome, the vast majority are from the newer areas of the Institute. And although we're changing shape, there's no sign of the dying of the Institute. We're weak in Europe, let's face this, as are many religious orders. But we're being very much encouraged by the way the Holy Spirit is moving people in our mission territories to come forward to join.
Well, when they come from these mission territories to Port Latina, you're English, mm-hmm. there are other members of your community from different nationalities. What language do you use? Or as you're in Italy, do you use Italian?
Yes, the house here in Rome is bilingual. We try and make sure that certainly by the time they finish in Italy, that the students can pretty much manage in English and Italian. I think it's important that we keep the Italian going, even though many of our scholastics, our students, are more comfortable speaking English at the moment. Because after all, the patrimony of the Institute is all in Italian. And if we're to pass on these works and people are to understand the depth of them, then we really must make sure that they're speaking Italian pretty well by the time they've finished in Rome.
Mm. But if as well, following Rosmini's teachings and thrust, you're looking to respond to the needs of charity and not saying no when you're asked, mm-hmm. if you're very thinly on the ground, how are you able to say yes all the time?
We're one institute, and although because of what's happening in England, Wales and Ireland, we're giving up some of the works we've been involved in for many years, we do have younger priests from India and Africa who are actually working in the British Isles to try and sustain the works. But if it's God's will that the work is coming to an end in this part of Western Europe, well, so be it. Rosmini had a wonderful esteem for the Holy See because he saw the Holy See as the essential part of the Church on earth and all other parts as being maybe temporary, as not being indispensable. Because after all, if our present Holy Father is the successor of Peter, that makes him an essential part of the Church with the Roman See. But even the Institute of Charity, dare I say, even the Jesuits, may one day pass away. So Rosmini says, don't cling to what you have. Don't even cling to the Institute. Because if it's fulfilled its role on earth, then so be it. It will fade away, and we mustn't cling to it. So it's true to say that we have, with some sadness, had to give up works that we've been involved in for many years in the British Isles. There is, on the other hand, expansion in East Africa, in India, and in Venezuela. So we're changing shape, and we accept that as God's will.
But again, if you have this fluid approach, what about the training of your young men? Because in many religious congregations, you're trained for a particular job. Even if you are a priest or a brother, you still have a particular area of expertise.
The person is at the centre of the vocation. And if we see a person who does have the potential, for example, to be a good teacher, then we'll direct them towards teacher training. If we see people who perhaps are marvellous with their hands, future motor mechanics, we have in East Africa a centre which will train our young men, who aren't always ordained, by the way, to be very good motor mechanics, to the glory of the Lord. You know, it's universal charity. And so we haven't said this so far. It's important to point out that not all of our Rosminians are ordained. When I think back to my own novitiate, the saints of the house were the lay brothers who maybe for 20, 30, 40 years had been gardeners, cooks, administrators, and had no aspirations to priesthood, didn't have the call. and yet became members of the Institute because they wanted to cooperate with other people in their own sanctification. It comes down to why we are Osminians. It's our own holiness that we're called to. And the charity that we exercise is universal. I wouldn't like our listeners to think that we're all called to priesthood and the only way to respond to the needs of the church is through the pastoral priestly ministry. And that's certainly not true. And we have a good number of Rosminian sisters as well who have exercised a vast range of different charities in the church, from teaching to medicine to the more mundane tasks of running houses, novitiate houses, on the missions. There is no limit by definition to universal charity, and that's what the order seeks to do according to the needs of the church.
Well, as you're approaching the beatification, because you are just a small congregation, will you all be able to be present for that, or just some of you?
It will be an extraordinary gathering. And again, I need to point out that not only are we priests and brothers and sisters, but the laity, whom we call ascribed members, are very much involved in this celebration. Because the aim of the society is to bring people together who want to cooperate in their own sanctification, we do have this movement of ascribed members, laity, worldwide, who are equally jubilant that Rosmini is finally being beatified. So the Rosminian family, priests, brothers, sisters, laity, are all coming together at Novara for this wonderful celebration. Personally, well, the captain has to stay with the ship, so I'll be remaining in Rome. But all the students are going up. We've got a couple of coach loads. We have 22 coming from Venezuela via Rome. They'll be at the Holy Father's audience the Wednesday before. And everyone will be converging on Novara for that event.
And will there be any of Rosmini's family?
I believe not. I must say I don't know the current state of the family, but it would only be distant relatives, because Rosmini was one of two sons and there were no grandchildren for his wonderful mother and father. Mm. So the direct line has died out. But there are family with the surname Rosmini, and it would be interesting to see how close the current Rosmini family are to Antonio, but that's outside my sphere of knowledge, I must say.
And it must be something that you're really pleased about. What strikes you most of all about the life of Rosmini?
Oh, gosh, how do you sum that up in one word? A holy man, but a man who saw no division between love of Christ and love of the church. You know, if we're servants of the church, we're servants of Christ. If we're servants of Christ, we're servants of the church, you know, the mystical body of Christ. That, for me, would summarise it, that because Rosmini saw, yes, all the faults of the church, but nevertheless saw that this was the chosen means by which people would reach their sanctification, so it becomes quite straightforward. You know, if we're serving the needs of the church today, we're serving, in a sense, the needs of Christ's mission. It's simple, it's straightforward, and that's really what attracts me.